Welcome back, everyone, to the XCast X-Files Podwatch, episode 73, in which we are covering Hungry and Millennium. Millennium! And, sorry, that's any Robbie Williams fans out there, which there's probably none listening to this.
No, well, they'd be loving Angels instead, so they'd be listening to your Millennium podcast. Yeah,
so. Very good. I wish we could say we rehearsed that joke, but it's just natural, guys. I'm Tony Black, and with me is Carl Sweeney. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Good to catch up, as ever.
Absolutely. And we've got some interesting episodes here. I've got a confession to make, actually, which I'm going to admit to everybody.
Okay.
We're doing this episode because I messed up. This was originally going to be the great Andrew Brooker and the equally great Russ Hugo with you today. But they recorded it. They did a great job. And then I forgot to save Brooker's recording, and he'd edited it and all this. They'd done so much good work, and I messed up. So my sincere apologies to Brooker and Russ for wasting their time.
Hang your head in shame, Tony Black.
I'm a terrible man. I'm a terrible man for all this Podwatch planning and editing. I knew I was going to make a mistake at some point, and it's happened. So you're stuck with us today talking about two early season 7 episodes, one of which I suppose isn't massively remembered. The other is perhaps remembered for various reasons, some fondly, some less fondly. So let's start with the first episode we're going to talk about today, Hungry, which is the third episode of season 7, and it aired on November 21st, 1999. Was written by Vince Gilligan and directed by Kim Manners, so two stalwarts. And this, Hungry could have been a real classic X-File. You know, for the simple fact that it was originally supposed to be told from the point of view of the monster in this, Rob Roberts. And it was going to be completely from his perspective all the way through. Mulder and Scully were going to appear briefly. You know, I suppose a little bit, a good analogy for it would have been the Doctor Who episode Blink, if anyone's seen that, which was all about one guest character, and you would see the Doctor and his companion very, very sporadically. And it worked really, really well, that did. Hungry chickens out of that, sadly. And there are moments of it. There are moments where it's Rob, and the point of view seems to be quite centred on the monster. But then very, very quickly, it becomes fairly mundane and standard. And I don't know, it's a solid sort of middle 3-star episode for me, if I was to rank it, Carl. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I sort of want to like this episode more than I do.
Yeah.
I sort of want this to be like a hidden classic whenever I come back to this one, but it just never quite makes the grade for me. I mean, it does go further with that concept than, you know, other episodes have done. You know, I mean, we get more like point of view camera shots in this episode than we're used to on the X-Files. And, you know, like some of the Mulder Scully scenes, like, you know, Rob's kind of eavesdropping or whatever. So it kind of is tethered to his point of view. But in a way, this is like a rehash of what they did in Zero Sum in a strange way, which is where, you know, Skinner is kind of the protagonist for the hour. And we're seeing Mulder through his eyes, and Mulder's kind of tailing Skinner and so on. But, I mean, with Zero Sum, that's a great episode because you've got, like, a really intense mythology storyline. And Skinner's somebody we know and love and we really care about. So, I mean, when you do something like here with Rob Roberts, I mean, we can talk a bit about him and everything. But, obviously, we've never heard of him before. We don't really care too much about him, even though our perspective's kind of aligned with him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's disappointing. I mean, you know, you mentioned the Skinner episode. And like you said, we were invested in that character, you know, to take, and it was obviously linked to the mythology as well, which made it even more interesting. And I'm a huge fan of Zero Sum. I love that episode to bits.
Brilliant episode.
It's a great episode. And, you know, with Vince Gilligan involved as well, who, you know, on the whole, he writes some great episodes, then you think you're kind of onto a potential winner here. And it's just quite underwhelming. It's not bad. You know, there are much, much worse episodes than Hungry out there. But it's just a bit one note when it could have been. I mean, this could have been a modern Tombs, because there's lots of sort of links, you know, similarities between Rob and Tombs in the simple fact that, you know, it's not that he's a hibernation mutant thing, but he's definitely not quite human, and he craves, you know, a human, you know, in this case, brains. brilliantly. He wants to eat people's brains, and he's got this horrible compulsion, hence the title Hungry, in that he's trying. It's like, I suppose it's like a metaphor for alcoholism and things like that, or eating, you know, eating disorders and things like that. It's what the metaphor for that really, in that whole compulsion thing, in that he needs to do this, and he's trying to be a good man. He's trying to control it. He's trying to consume it, to subsume it. But it's, and that's the difference with Toombs, in that Toombs was just a monster who was going out there and, you know, with his life cycle. But the similarities are there, in that you could have had a really classic monster here, and also one that has a real sort of human element. But it doesn't really, it's not really there, is it, at the end of the day?
No, I suppose it all hinges on whether or not, by the final scene of the episode, he gets gunned down, you know, and at that, if the episode's done its job, you should feel that it's kind of a tragic ending, and you should feel really upset that Rob Roberts has been shot, I suppose. But I kind of don't get that far with it myself. Mm. I do like the stuff, you know, I think the idea of like a monster taking diet tablets and stuff, that is pretty funny. And I think that, you know, we got this like California setting, I think. And I do think Gilligan was one of the sharpest writers after season six with like adapting to the new LA-based production, you know. So episodes like Drive, Roadrunners, this, X-Cops, I think they make good use of like the kind of locales the X-Files had to film in after they moved away from Vancouver. So I guess I kind of appreciate that aspect of this episode. And of course, we've got to remember that I think the intention here was to start off the season, because I think this might have been the first one they recorded, the first one they filmed.
Yeah.
Was to kind of ease Duchovny and Anderson back in, and to give them like a bit of a lighter workload, a bit like Unusual Suspects or Red Rum in season 8 or something like that, you know. So maybe it's an episode that was kind of born out of necessity, having to give the leads a bit of time off.
It could be, you know, and Mulder all the way through this is quite fun, because he's always quite one step ahead, you know. He pretty much knows it's Rob pretty much straight away, and he's like, you know, he's going around there, and he's being really quite comically sort of taking the mick, because he's going around there almost befriending the guy, and he knows full well that he's the monster. He just knows he's got to prove it. He's not quite there yet.
It's always good when we see Mulder like on the tail of somebody, like you mentioned Toombs when he's talking about his Norwegian elk hound or whatever, or in Terms of Endearment and in this and Zero Sum. It's quite, I don't know, Duchovny seems to like playing that kind of exchange, you know.
Yeah, no, he does. I think he gets a real kick out of that. And like you said, I mean, there are things that Vince Gilligan does, like, you know, it fits with his kind of repertoire of stories about quite blue collar kind of people, you know, in that Americana kind of way. You know, you get that with Drive, which is obviously a much better episode than this, but it's alongside the kind of themes that we talked about on the Podwatch that Gilligan really likes to tap into. And you know, it's a good metaphor. It's an interesting metaphor. I just wish there was more substance to the whole thing, really. So, because it ends up being fairly forgettable when it could have been really good. It could have been a real, like you said, it could have been a real sleeper. And I wouldn't say it puts me to sleep, but I wouldn't say it necessarily keeps me awake either.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it is interesting to have an episode set around like fast food culture, you know, working in a fast food environment. I mean, I've never worked anywhere like that myself, but I've done my fair share of like fast food consumption. It makes a nice change of pace, I think. I'll tell you what's really strange, though, is that when you get to My Struggle, and you've got that teaser sequence with Mulder talking about his backstory and everything, and when he's laying out the photographs on the table, you see like Toombs and the Fluke Man, and Rob Roberts is one of the ones he puts down there.
Is he really?
He's the one who kind of seems a bit out of place. I think the Peacocks might be there too. And I just thought it was really odd that they chose to kind of reference Hungry. And the only thing I could put it down to was maybe they wanted to give a Vince Gilligan episode a shout out. But
maybe,
you know, why not Pusher, or why not Folie à Deux, or something like that? You know, why this one? It just seemed kind of strange.
Maybe it's because he is much more of a conventional monster looking kind of character. Yeah, you know, in that when he takes off his fake hair and ears and that, he does look visibly like a Fluke Man with the face. You know, he's got that monstrous element, whereas Pusher doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, some of the other characters, they're monsters in different ways, or they're Monster of the Week stories. I don't know, mate, but it could be a bit of both. But that's it. I'll look out for that when I watch My Struggle again, as we close in on season 11. But that's Hungry. I'm going to go and have a biscuit before we talk about our next episode. We which is Millennium. Now, this one is a really important episode in its own way. The fourth episode of Season 7 aired on November 28th, 1999, a month, roughly, before the Millennium of 2000, the big one, written by Vince Gilligan and Frank Spotnitz. Oddly enough, even though Vince Gilligan never wrote any of Millennium, the series, which is really weird, and nor did Frank Spotnitz. Or he didn't write much of it, I don't think.
I think he did a few, but not massive amounts, I think.
Yeah, although directed by Thomas J. Wright, which is great, because he was essentially the Kim Manners of Millennium, really. And obviously, it's an attempt to wrap up the spin-off, ultimately the spin-off, Millennium, which starred Lance Henriksen as Frank Black, who was it both inspired by Will Graham from Silence of the Lambs, and then went on to inspire Brian Fuller's Will Graham in Hannibal, in many ways. So in many ways, the kind of criminal profile that Mulder could have become had Mulder stayed in violent crimes and not gone off and investigated all the weird alien stuff. He's a guy who sees what the killer sees, basically.
Yeah.
And Millennium I don't know if you agree with me here. Millennium is probably one of the most underrated TV shows ever made.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Millennium. And so when I discovered that Frank Black was going to make an appearance on The X-Files, I was kind of sad that it happened in this way, just because I thought Millennium deserved to go at least another season. I thought there was plenty of more mileage left in that series, you know, especially the fact that it was curtailed in 1999, basically.
Yeah.
That just doesn't seem right. So I was kind of glad he was coming onto The X-Files, but sad that it had to happen, basically, because his series had been cancelled, you know.
Yeah, it's a real big disappointment that Millennium didn't get past its third season. And Millennium was a show that started. It was a very, very interesting show, because it started off with Frank Black as a profiler who each week would investigate some of the darkest, you know, thriller cases, darkest murders that had ever been done on network television at that point. You know, there were some really, really dark episodes in that first season, and there was this undercurrent of demonology, you know, ultimately underneath, and this idea that there was a genuine hell going on and this kind of thing, and that there were flickers of supernatural in there. You know, I mean, Frank's ability itself had flickers of sort of psychic premonition and psychic ability. But it was never, you know, full on said this is supernatural, or even it was never full on said that this is an X-Files spin-off. It took until the second season, when Chris Carter stepped away to do the movie, and it was taken over by Glenn Morgan and James Wong, who did a fantastic year of TV. The second season of Millennium is really strange and esoteric and unusual and brilliant in many places. It has some incredible episodes of television, but completely changes the texture of the show to become this very sort of arcane mythological beast, which was much more X-Files-like. And hence why I loved it so much. And then brings in the first tether to the X-Files, you know, Jose Chung, oddly enough, as the proof that this is a spin-off. And then the third season kind of tries to juggle both. The third season goes back a little bit to the first season and still has the esoterica of the second, but doesn't quite do it right either way. So it ends in a bit of a damp squib. So this, to cut a long story short, is an attempt to wrap up Frank Black's storyline that everyone was worried that was left dangling just as we come to the Millennium, which is the big point of Millennium, was this fear that hell was going to rise or... And Millennium had this great idea of a ticking clock, essentially, down. You know, Frank Black would switch his computer on every day and it would say, Frank, you have like 300 days remaining or whatever. The question is, as a Millennium fan, Carl, and as people already know, we're going to do a Millennium podcast down the line. We're going to explore Millennium like we do the X-Files. But as a Millennium fan, do you think this is a satisfactory ending to that?
Well, I think that the simple fact of seeing Frank Black and Fox Mulder and Dana Scully together carries this one some way.
Yeah. You know?
Like you've already said, that the different seasons of Millennium weren't always like commensurate with each other. So when you get this zombie storyline, this also doesn't feel like of a piece with any of the seasons of Millennium to me, frankly. And I know that Lance Henriksen was pretty contemptuous of the storyline. He didn't really think it was fitting for Frank Black and so on. I think there's some nice moments, but I think this episode, to me, it kind of has a kind of slapdash feel in that it feels kind of like a first draft in that, for example, there's a scene with Frank Black where he's watching an American football game and he drops a reference to First and 18th, and Mulder takes it to be a reference to the football, but obviously it's a biblical reference. And it just feels to me like Frank's got a sign over his head saying, "I'm giving you a clue" or something. And it's really odd that Mulder... It's really odd that Mulder doesn't pick up on it. It sort of feels like something that the writers put in. They sort of said, yeah, we'll go back and fix that and we'll punch it up a bit later, but they never got round to. So I sort of feel that this is kind of a serviceable episode, but it never hits the heights I would want to see from an episode of The X-Files which features Frank Black. But I do like some moments here.
Yeah, I do. I mean, like you say, it's a thrill to see Frank with Mulder and Scully in itself. And Frank Black is what is a genuinely brilliant character. I mean, I would say Frank Black is as good a character as Mulder and Scully. I genuinely would. I love the guy. And that's why, you know, there's a big, well, I say big, there's a core swell of fandom online that are salivating for a Millennium revival. They really are. And Chris Carter recently mentioned that he hopes to do something one day with this, you know, well, Frank, I mean, Lance Henriksen's getting up there in years, so he needs to get on with it. But it's a great series. It's a great character. And even though the Millennium is 17 years gone, there is no shortage of angst and existential millennial angst that show could still do. So this is a very odd way to try and end that show by throwing some zombies in there. Apparently, Vince Gilligan said that it wasn't supposed to be a conclusion to Millennium, but... Yeah. How else are you supposed to read it? You know, it's come off the back of...
It's New Year's Eve 99. You
know? It's New Year's Eve 1999. It's come off the back of a cancelled show. You know, it just feels like they knew that the ending of season 3 of Millennium wasn't a conclusion either. And they were like, ooh, let's give Frank Black some level of closure because we know we're never going to get to use him again. And him and Mulder fighting zombies in a basement after, like... a bit of build-up. It's just not... Anyone who watches Millennium would go, that is not what the show was.
No, definitely not. I'll tell you what they should have done. You know, I mean, I get that you've got to, you know, you're not going to have millions of people watching who've never seen Millennium, so you can't go too far into that show's kind of history, but you could easily bring over a character like Lucy Butler.
Definitely. Yeah. Absolutely. Lucy Butler was massively, massively, like, supernatural. Yes. She was the devil, basically.
Yeah, she'd have been a great, you know, a guest. I mean, she's already been on The X-Files because she's in Schizogeny and she's in I Want to Believe as different characters, Sarah Jane Redmond. But I would like to send her in this episode. There was also a really good Millennium episode in season 1 called Force Majeure, which kind of alluded to the Millennium directly, and I felt probably deserved a follow-up. There were ways you could have done this story that harkened back to the series Millennium and done it a bit more justice, I think. But the way it's done is kind of strange. I do like that it begins with a scene in a funeral parlour, which is kind of a callback to the spiritual father of Millennium in a way, which is the episode Irresistible with Donny Faster.
Yeah, that's true.
So I do like that, and I like the final moment with Frank and Jordan Black.
Yeah.
It's just the zombie stuff doesn't really do it for me, I'm afraid.
And then... obviously, it's remembered, weirdly enough, for nothing to do with Frank in many ways, in the fact that the very ending, you get the first proper kiss.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Between Mulder and Scott. Right. This, doesn't this prove how we see the show in such a different way?
No, I didn't really think. Of course not. So, the kiss, though, doesn't it feel a bit, like, arbitrary to you? Like, it feels like if you took the kiss out, you wouldn't feel like this episode was missing a Mulder-Scully kiss, you know? And, you know... It's just a couple of episodes since The Sixth Extinction 2 where they have that lovely scene in the hallway. Like, and when they talk about, you're my constant, my touchstone, etc., etc. Why didn't Mulder, like, plant one on Scully there, you know? it sort of feels like they're trying to face both ways, like 10-13, doesn't it? Because the shippers will love that moment, understandably so. Yeah. And the people who don't want the series to go in that direction can kind of write it off as kind of a holiday kiss or whatever.
You know? Yeah, yeah, true. Yeah, it's kind of, it's a bit neutral, isn't it, in a way?
Yes.
Even though they're layering in what will eventually become the romance, aren't they? You know, they're trying to do it in a very, you know, subtlish, underhand way. Yeah. but it's fine. You know, it's a new year. But I'd be lying if I said that I wish that, you know, if this is the last time we ever see Frank Black, and my worry is that it might be, I wish he'd had a better send-off, because the show, when it was good, it was as good as The X-Files any day. really. Oh, so
definitely. You know. It is quite nice that, you know, the last moment, if it has to be an understated ending for Frank, the fact that he's walking off hand in hand with his daughter. And, you know, that father-daughter relationship was like the core of that show, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
So it's kind of nice, but it, you know.
That's true. I'd want him to get a happy ending. Do you know what I mean? He deserves it after everything he's been through.
He does.
But hopefully we'll see Frank Black again. And we will talk much, much more Millennium down the line as we get towards covering season four of The X-Files, because we're going to do it in tandem like the shows were. Yeah. So we're a little bit of a way away from it yet, but not in the too distant future. We're going to have The Time Is Now, which is the Millennium spin-off podcast. So we'll get much more into the world of Frank Black when we get there. So yeah, there are so many days remaining before we get there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's... two episodes at the start of season seven, and the show continues with the episodes Rush and the Goldberg Variation, which I think you're on again, aren't you, Carl, tomorrow?
Yes, with the wonderful Sarah Blair, of course. And we talk a little bit about Mulder and Scully's kind of subtle relationship in that one. So, yeah, that's a fun one, I think.
Yeah, I like Rush. I like because there's a lot of them two going, oh, my God, we're old now. Which I always really enjoyed. You and Sarah will be back to entertain us with that, but as always, remember that you can find us on Twitter at @X_cast and find us on Facebook at the X-Files X-Cast Basement podcast fan group, and we've got a great group in there talking everything season 11, especially as we ramp up towards the new series. So do find us on both of those, and until next time, remember, this is who we are.